Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the January 17 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in Chicago this week. Wheat futures managed to finish the week lower. Corn was down, but soybeans gained 38 cents in the nearby March contract, and the November, or the new crop, was up 25 and a quarter. We'll try to find out why today. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Well, let's open our discussion with this question, Jackie Bakes. When you look over the week and how the trade finished up on the changes for the week, is there a good reason that soybeans managed to rally?
Well, I think there's a number of things. You know, if you look back and you look at the sales, we continue to get sales to China, although they are mostly new crop sales. You know, I believe the old crop will still come along. I think as you look at the grain stocks from last week, we saw the on farm at $955 million and the off farm at $1.192 million. You know, would say that they've got probably fairly adequate stocks, and yet at the very same time, I don't think the farmer's willing to let go of his either, especially with the kind of weather that we've had. So I think there's plenty of reason to see it. And when you look at the corn market, you know, the corn market kind of, we slid down, but basis on old crop corn got better in most places. So what does that say? It says that just like the grain stock said, $6.38 billion sitting on the farm, 4.05 at the elevator, they don't have everything they need. So I think that this market is now going to wait until next week's export sales to see if we can actually sell corn at this level, and then it'll figure out where to go.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management?
Yeah, I think realistically, you know, the January futures went off the board to a premium of the March. The cash values have been relatively strong, so I think realistically this advance is warranted, but this week we kind of reached up into resistance, and we're going to need to feed the bull, so to speak. Yesterday's crush numbers were record high for the time of year, which was very impressive and well above trade expectations. But here again, we're probably going to need to find some additional demand going forward. One of the features we heard this week, too, was that China continues to sniff around our Gulf for beans for February and March. This is not very typical of a standard basis pattern when you get South American beans coming online, which should be before too long. They should be shifting their interest to South America. Now, whether that's because of the political situation in Argentina or if it's because of the taxation situation in Brazil is yet to be determined, but we're going to continue to monitor this closely because we cannot afford to be exporting any more beans. As of this week's sales, we have already bested the USDA's expectations for export sales or exports. So we need to either ration some of this supply or start booking some more imports for later on in the year.
And Ellen Dearden.
And there was a rumor kind of late in the day on Friday that said that there was going to be some Paraguay beans move into the eastern seaboard U.S. So, you know, I'm not sure how the logistics are going to work out. I think that China's probably double booking beans at this stage of the game with his Feb-March buys or Feb-March shipments out of the Gulf. And you have to wonder, you know, who's going to get canceled? Will it be U.S. beans or will it be Brazil beans? Right now, everything's just slanted toward the U.S.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Ellen, that you bring that up, because you have to wonder, too, how much the fact that Brazil is turning all their principal roads into toll roads is, you know, that China's now hedging its bets. They said that shipments from Mato Grosso do Sul down to Paranaguá and have changed dramatically, gone from 66% up to 100% out of Mato Grosso do Sul. Now, when you look at Mato Grosso, 2.3 times further away, because of the cost to ship a bushel of beans, and from Mato Grosso do Sul to go to Paranaguá is basically 44 cents versus 50 cents to go to a further port, it really makes you wonder if that's not the case. You know, they're hedging their bets because we know they have a lot of infrastructure problems down there to begin with.
Ellie, what do you do for producers when they're looking to make maybe some additional sales on whatever stocks they happen to have on hand to try to manage that risk, which would be the risk of China will cancel, and that would have a large impact on you, cancel a U.S. shipment, that is, and that would have a fairly large impact, I would think.
I think you have risk both on the basis and the board side on the beans at this stage of the game. I mean, we've got premium cash bids in a lot of the country, and I noticed that there had been markets along the Illinois River that had said they weren't going to take beans the first part of next week, and apparently they have gotten barges in because they're open today and they're going to be open again next week. I think the beans just need to be moved. The corn is a little more troublesome because we just seems like every time we have a rally, something lops it off. I can make a good case for saying that last Friday's report low was a 20-week low in the corn, and that we ought to be looking at a move up into the 455, 460 area. Do I think we're going to get there? Probably not. There's just going to be too much farmer selling on rallies, whether they're 20-cent rallies or 30-cent rallies, I'm not sure. But there's going to be a lot of selling, particularly if it takes a couple of weeks to get there, because those bills are going to be coming due for the first part of February and then the 1st of March.
Hey, Ellie, what's your view? You mentioned that they're not going to be taking soybeans. Is that because the Gulf is calling for corn, or are there other reasons?
No, they just don't have barges north of St. Louis.
Right.
So, and at this stage of the game, there's not a lot of DDGs moving down the Illinois River. That had been a huge business for ADM Peoria, and that's kind of dried up. And I don't know if that all that business had been going to China, and that's just not the case, or what the deal is. But barges haven't been coming up north of St. Louis, and probably with this cold spat in here, barge traffic will be subdued again.
Bill, have you watched both the Gulf basis and your local basis for corn, and which one do you think is leading that particular grain?
Well, I think when you look at your corn basis, we initially saw it soften after the USDA's report, and then we saw that farmers basically cut loose a good chunk of grain that they'd been basically holding on to till after the first of the year, a lot of them for cash flow reasons. But after that, we have seen the basis try to firm up just a little bit, but not enough to make up for the advance in the futures market. And I think realistically, you know, that particular situation is likely to change, you know, in the next couple, 3 weeks. But at this particular point in time, the corn market, especially on the cash side, is probably satisfied and will need to chew through some inventory. Gulf at the Gulf basis for beans has been relatively firm, but tapered off a little bit late last week and early this week. I think realistically, from the producer's perspective, you know, we probably moved a lot of beans into the pipeline already, but we should continue to do so at these value levels. If it's needed to get a re-ownership call on the books, you know, a consideration of a May option might be out there, you know, 13, some of those options are out there about 30, 40 cents. That's a little bit rich for my blood, but, you know, if you do a partial re-ownership, it's probably warranted. We have not talked anybody out of cash sales, probably for the last, you know, couple, 3 weeks. As far as the 20-week low being on the books, you know, the chart really looks nice from a weekly perspective and a daily perspective in corn, whereas the beans are right to that point where they're going to make a move one way or the other, and I don't think I want to have the risk of ownership in the bin.
Turn your attention to the corn market, each of you, just for a bit. I'd like to take up last Friday's USDA reports, the grain stocks numbers in particular, and then what WASDE did with those numbers. As Darrell Good had told us on that day, he believes the number's not particularly good, the grain stocks number, that is, and that WASDE faded it pretty hard. And I'm not quite certain that I have this right, but if my figures are right, it looks to me like there was about a half a billion bushels difference in what, or half a bit, 500 half a billion bushels difference in what might actually be there and what they're saying usage is like and what the stocks will be. So are we worried about this grain stocks changing in March? And is that where that flop might come in the corn market? And we'll start with you, Jackie.
Are we worried about it? Well, we're always worried about it,
right.
Especially
well,
when it comes to those numbers. You know, the numbers are should be as good as they can be because they supposedly get them from the elevators and from the farmers, you know, but not every farmer is talked to and not, you know, all the elevators are talked to. I would have to think that the one thing that kind of surprised me on that report was that we didn't see any change in exports at all, even though we had seen quite a bit of export interest. And so if we do feed numbers, I know there was a lot of arguing about the 100 million extra feed feed usage that came in. So I think that we've got an opportunity that it may not change very much. I just don't know. You know, I'd like to believe that they're as accurate as they can be, but I too felt that, boy, I thought it actually came in a little low is what I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot higher than it was.
I would sure agree with Jackie on that. I thought that the ending stocks number looked a little, the DEIS-1 stocks number looked low and the carryout looks low. I've been saying I expected to see USDA increase feed use, but I don't think we've got cattle numbers down, and the cattle numbers have, in the last few years anyway, have whatever their inventory numbers show is really dictated what the feed use is. So we ought to be lower there. I mean, I know chickens eat a lot and on hogs, but we don't have the hog numbers either. So I think that by the time we get to the date that I'm getting worried about is really the Ag Outlook meeting next month, and not maybe even have to get to that March stocks number.
That's Tuesday, March 4th, by the way. Bill, your opinion?
Yeah, I think realistically, as far as trying to get the numbers to line up, I think we probably pulled more new crop into old crop stocks because that carryout number for last year was probably lower than what is being stated right now. And when you look at the quarterly grain stocks figure that you got for December and try to back the numbers in, agronomically we thought that the yield in corn should be higher, but since we drew that stocks into last year's crop, the yield actually had to come down, and that's the telltale number in the balance sheet that says this probably isn't right, but this is where the volume was to take care of.
Hold it. Which number is the telltale number?
The yield number.
The yield number from last year?
Yes, it's dropping two bushels. Bigger than that.
You still think it's bigger than that? Okay.
Yeah. Well, see, and I looked at that and I thought that was right in line because when you saw an increase of 500 million harvested acres, anytime you add a lot more harvested acres, you draw your number down rather than drive it higher. So if we wouldn't have seen a change in harvested acres, then I'd be arguing that number probably wasn't right. But that's my opinion. I mean, harvested acres dictates a lot of that.
You know, I suppose it matters. Here's what doesn't matter too much is which number it is.
Right.
It doesn't, right? It doesn't matter. So the question then is which direction is it? And mostly whether the 1.6, what is it, 1.61 billion for the ending stocks is correct or whether it's higher than that. And maybe we can go around the horn. We'll start with you, Bill, and then Ellie, and then finish up with Jackie on that one.
Yeah, I think that's a very key point because the thing to take away from this is the carryout figure at 1.5 or 1.6, no matter which it is double what it was last year. So by default, the end users have now got a comfort factor that's at least twice what it was a year ago. And that being the case, it sets up the trade to have a very negative bias. And as we talk about those longer-term baseline numbers coming out, as we think about, you know, the March perspective planning going forward, we're probably not going to be able to manufacture any long-term bullish news, so the trade's bias has turned defensive and will likely to continue to do so until we get a lot closer to springtime field activity.
Ellie?
I would sure agree with that assessment. I think by the time it's all said and done with carryout, we'll be above that $1.631 billion that we got for carryout on this January report. I would agree the spreads look negative, and that shows the commercial bias is negative. The number that I thought was interesting on the report, Todd, that we haven't touched on, is the average price did not change on corn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can that be? It didn't change on beans.
Well, when I look at it, Ellie, I don't know. I thought that was very interesting, seeing that we dropped 5 days worth of, as far as how much we have for supply. We dropped from 50 to 45. You would have expected that price would have probably gone up. I think they're hedging their bets with the idea that we're going to plant more corn than what everybody's thinking. And on a cash side, you know, that it's, you don't see a lot of corn sold ahead at the higher prices. So, you know, 440 might be a safe place to be for now, you know, and it's the same thing on the beans. I don't know, you know, when you look at you talk about the feed number with the extra 100 million in there, you know, there was a lot of arguing that went on that they weren't accurate on the feed number last year because we had more animals eating, and now suddenly we've gone almost a billion bushels from last year to this year and actually have less animals. But at the very same time, I think we have to give some credit to corn versus distillers. I think that corn at the price it's at right now, and at least with the guys I talk to or I work with on cattle, corn is back in that ration in place of distillers in a lot of cases. And so maybe they are very accurate in what they're doing just because of price change. I don't know.
Now, Ellie, USDA seems to think they're pretty accurate. They did not change the target or the midpoint for either corn or soybeans, but they narrowed up the range for both of them, and they narrowed the soybean range by 25 cents, I think, on both ends, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you think they're right?
Oh, heck, who knows?
I like someone who's honest.
I would say, too, that looking at the broad strokes, I think farmer selling for this year has been a lot slower than in years past, so that average may well yet be a pendulum that could swing a fair amount because, as I say, the farmer selling has been so slow, they've been thinking it's going to be okay or we're going to get a chance. And the market profile is not necessarily supporting that at this time.
And you're talking corn, aren't you, Bill?
Yes.
On that comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right. So the idea then is that it could swing. That is, if the trade in general, which I think is looking forward and what, more bearish than friendly at this point, on the idea that cash sales will be made lower over the next 3 months or 6 months than they have been. What could change that, or are there any good reasons that would change, do you think, Bill?
I guess the bottom line right now is the profitability. The guys, the corn price is half of what it was, let's say, a year ago. Bean prices are still pretty good. It seems to favor more bean acres. So if we happen to work through this spring time frame and realize that our domestic acres are not going to be up to what they were last year or come in 2 or 3 or 4 million acres less, that would be a very supportive feature that would hold prices together. The second one is South American corn production. You know, this year we knew the acres were going to be down. We know that Argentina has seen some stress. If we get some confirmation that the Argentinian corn production is 3 or 4 million metric tons less than what the USDA is saying, that would obviously lend support. And the second crop stuff in Brazil may not be up to speed either. So those are a couple things that could happen. And then obviously if we have some spring planting delays or something like that, might have an impact as well.
Jackie, what do you see on the usage side for exports and ethanol for corn? Does it change much?
Well, as long as the other two on the side don't punch me, I honestly think that we could actually see exports go back up to the 1.8 that we had been at for so many years. But, of course, to do that, we have to have a lower price. We can't have a higher price. And I'm looking at the export sales next week and saying, okay, you know, they're going to be my barometer as to whether or not that market is going to accept the move that we've made higher at this stage. Because we know we made sales at the 406, 410 level. So, you know, what are you going to do? From my perspective, I think we could see higher exports. I think ethanol is probably about where it's going to stay.
You can always find this program, Commodity Week, on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. You'll also find our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. If you have not signed up yet, still can, right there at willag.org. Come and join us Friday evening, January the 24th, here on campus.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This program comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here are the settlements on the weekly trade from the CME Group in Chicago. Friday to Friday, March corn at $4.24, finished 8¾ cents lower. December at $4.49, the weekly change down 9¼. March beans at $13.16½, up 38. November at $11.25, 25¼ higher on the week. They bottomed, by the way, at $10.99. March bean meal at $4.34.50, up $20.90, and the bean oil at $37.80, finished 43 cents on the weekly change. March wheat at $5.63½, down 5½. July at $5.77, finished 3¾ lower. February live cattle, $140.35, the weekly change up $3.65. March feeders at $167.92½, were off 45 cents for the week, and April lean hogs posted an outside up week, finishing at $91.90, 90 cents higher. Now here's Ed Kieser, meteorologist, with the weather forecast.
Problems are growing in southern Argentina due to excessive dryness and high heat. Many locations in Buenos Aires, La Pampa, and southern Cordoba have not had rain in more than a week and have moisture deficits of 3 to 5 inches since the beginning of December. That dryness and heat is impacting nearly half of Argentina's corn and soybean crop. Hot and mostly dry weather will continue this weekend. Next week, a few disturbances and eventually a cold front will bring a few chances of rain and gradually bring a break in the heat. The big question mark is how much rain will fall next week. At this point, it appears that an inch or two may fall in the driest areas, which would be the most since the beginning of December. Dry and cooler weather should follow from Friday into the beginning of the week of January 27th. Southern Argentina has had problematic weather all season, from too dry and then too wet weather for planting to the current hot and dry weather for vegetative and reproductive crops. It is likely that yields have already been reduced, with the threat of more reductions if rainfall remains subpar. One thing for sure, rainfall is needed. If rain does not materialize in a significant way by next Thursday, the focus next week will be on the reduction of the crop size from Argentina. The other area of concern in recent weeks has been across parts of center-west into southeast Brazil. Most of Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia have been intensely dry of late. It does appear that the weather pattern is changing, and much-needed rain will fall across that region over the coming week, improving crop conditions. Meanwhile, South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay and northern Argentina are expected to turn mostly dry for about a week. This should not be a problem, as that's one area in South America that has received adequate rainfall in recent weeks. Rain chances pick up again around next Friday.
Our thanks go to meteorologist Ed Kieser here on Illinois Public Media.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 17th day of January. Our panelists today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois. I'd like each of you to consider what producers who are likely to have more bushels than not of corn left in the bin might be unpriced, that is, might be able to do at this point, and whether they should begin making additional sales. We'll start with Bill Gentry.
At this point in time, if you've got more bushels than you anticipated for both corn and beans, both, we'd be pushing them out the door, potentially considering some reownership in the beans. A little less enthusiastic about reownership in the corn. As far as new crop is concerned, new crop corn sales are dropping down to the break-even price for some producers, and it's starting to crowd margins significantly. I would say if you've got good margins still, buying some put options in the corn would be good. If not, maybe some cash sales or some straight futures hedges might be warranted. In the beans, the options don't work very well for new crop. I'd say probably some cash sales or straight hedges would be in order. 15% to 25% is basically where we're looking at for most of our guys.
Ellen Dearden?
Boy, I hate this corn price. I hate the futures price anyway. I do like the basis. I don't want to sign a basis contract particularly, but I'm really only moving corn here to meet some cash flow needs. I am looking for a bulge in prices of about 25 cents higher to get myself well beyond 50% sold on old crop, and also probably up in the 40% sold on new crop. New beans, I think you have to be a seller. I think 1130 is going to be difficult for November. It's got to be a cash sale. I can't see an option there that'll work. I am done selling old crop beans. Have been for a couple weeks. Want to be there.
And Jackie Bakes.
Well, on old crop corn, I think that, you know, we have to be aware of a number of things that are going on. We've got, at least when I look at a monthly chart, 440 is a strong overhead resistance area. We couldn't even make 440 after the report. So what does that put in the future? Well, 406 was where we were right before the report. 423.5 is a strong point for me. The low looks to be 386. I really think you should come in and consider two different strategies if you don't want to go into cash. Cash is still the best place to look because basis has been good, but look at a March 420 put for 7 cents and just have yourself sit there. Not, you know, it takes you through that third week in February. You can even use it to protect yourself from the total washout that could come if we can't sell corn. Otherwise, sell March futures and buy a March call. At the money call was 8 cents today. You've got a fixed risk position, and you've got yourself covered better than seeing open in the marketplace. On old crop beans, I've been sold a long time already too, but I would use a nearby or a very short option. I think beans still have an opportunity to go higher. New crop corn, you know, there's a number of different things you can do. I like short-dated options at this point in time. If you want to cover your crop insurance, you know, buy a short-dated March option. It expires the third week in February. It gives you coverage through three quarters of that month, and the average doesn't change much in the last week. And or come in and buy a March short-dated. Short-dated options are based off of the new crop futures. So they are really a handy thing to use, and you can use them also from a sell side.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report, or Commodity Week, rather, from Illinois Public Media. Now a final word from our panelists. We'll do that quickly from Jackie Vicks.
Well, these are difficult times to try and make decisions in, but what you have to do is have yourself prepared for everything.
Ellen Dearden?
It appears to me that the Argentine weather is going to be the key to how we open on Monday night. About half of their corn will be pollinating this upcoming week.
And Bill Gentry.
As we've been talking over the last year, we expected our margins to really get collapsed over the course of this year, and we expect it's going to continue, so we need to critically think our numbers and be more proactive marketers all the way through this next market year.
Our thanks, of course, go to Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, and Ellen Dearden. This has been the January 17 edition of Commodity Week. You can find it online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Okay, we are clear, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate you all.
Hey, what did you think? I was talking to Dr. Cornier this week, and he was telling me that, you know, one of the things that kicked us on the corn market, too, was that ConAb came out with the Brazilian corn number.
Right.
And he said that that they did not change the Safrina corn from last year.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they just carried in the old one, you know, and so mm-hmm. How good is that?
Yeah, so. You know, I think. Yeah, and what do they think? The Safrina corn crop's going to be half?
About half.
Yeah.
So they didn't change the size of this year's corn crop? They just left it at what?
They just carried it in.
They just said it's going to be exactly the same as it was last year?
Yeah. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and if we could just get wheat to go once, we didn't talk about wheat today.
Yeah.
But
wheat was a dog today, wasn't it?
Oh, it's just been a dog.
Down 9 cents after yesterday's little shot was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just can't get going. But, you know, Brazil is looking to try and lift the 10% import ban mm-hmm. from North America. So, you know, mm-hmm. if that could happen. But, I mean, how much shorter can the traditional funds get?
Yeah.
Is what I want to know.
I don't know.
They're record short right now. Every week we say the same thing, record short, because mm-hmm. they just get record shorter.
Right. These aren't the index, but the traditional funds.
Yeah, it's your traditional funds that are out there.
And the guys that I talk to in the Plains area, you might query Zuzulo when you talk to him at the end of next week, Todd. All they talk about is blowing dirt.
Oh, yeah.
Just how much erosion and how much wheat's getting blown out.
They're still dry. I don't know about desperately dry yet, but they're still dry. a bit, not quite, this, they're not drying the same way they were in 2012.
Right.
Or, and we are not, but it's still sort of that same area. So if you just draw, if you just do, what is it, I-35, if you just divide the nation, I-35, that's kind of, that's where you get dry. You can, the haves and haves not, have
you
nots.
You can tell by their attitudes. I talked to quite a few guys in Kansas today, and they're ornery as cusses, boy, I'll
I
tell
know.
You. And, it's, and it is just because of that, you know. Mm. And the snowpack.
Right.
You know, we've got a halfway decent snowpack, but it's certainly not what we'd like to see for a snowpack coming into this year. So it's going to be a very trying year again for them. And of course, they're also all unhappy because of their cattle margin calls. You know, up $3 in a week is pretty scary when they all hedged at like 135.
That was quite the nice little spike in the cattle this week.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was.
I think that we have quite a few specs in that market too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've moved out of...
I wonder what hogs would have done this week if cattle hadn't soared, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like wonder what corn would have done if wheat hadn't gone down so much.
Right. I think corn would have done just fine. Mm-hmm. But wheat was the albatross around its neck.
Wheat's been the dog.
It's been the dog. And, you know, we suffer from this same old spreading all the time. Buy beans, sell corn, send wheat. You know, buy beans, sell corn, sell wheat. Then buy them back, and we get a bounce, and then they just go back to what they were doing before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to adjust to the late 90s, early 2000 markets.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
and that's what we always saw back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had... an event yesterday or Thursday in Springfield, Sherman, at the Farm Credit Services Building, and Doug Johns from ADM, he's a VP ADM River Systems, was there to talk about it. And he's of the opinion that on the soybeans, that things will turn to South American exports sooner rather than later, like February, and earlier in February rather than late. That might be an interesting one to watch.
When it's very, very scary because they have not sold anywhere near as many new crop beans in South America as they did last year.
He thinks harvest will come earlier this year. And I guess they started earlier. They started planting.
Well, they're already harvesting.
Well, I know, but I think he thinks the bulk of harvest is going to going to be a slog of harvest much earlier than usual. But I suppose we should know that because weren't they in much earlier than they had been?
Yep.
I think so.
But you know, a decade ago we talked about Brazil's harvest in late March, and now we're talking about Brazil's harvest in late January.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, that is a huge move forward.
It is. Well, and they are also doing a lot of, you know,
The double crop.
Mm-hmm. That's the biggest part about the whole thing. You
well,
know,
are they double cropping beans after beans, or double crop with Safrina corn?
They've been
doing corn.
They've been doing corn with the Safrina corn, but this year there's talk that they're going to double crop beans.
Right,
and that's been a drag on them.
Well, and the other thing too that's been a drag is that their 90 to 100 day beans have been coming in at 47.8 on average, which they normally never come in better than 40. So you can understand when they raise the crop to 91.3 million metric tons.
So let me ask you a different question. If they have, if they move their bean planting up and they're getting much better yields on the first crop, can they possibly get a good yield on the second crop? I can't imagine that would be the case. I guess
it
just adds.
Realistic.
Doesn't sound like it'd be realistic.
Probably just like us. It depends on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, completely, because... it's just like double crop beans here. You know, if you've got a double crop, you got to wonder. Mm. You really don't know. I don't know.
And that's something we didn't talk about. Double crop beans in the U.S. are really going to be down this year.
Yes.
I don't care how many acres we have planted in the spring. The double crop acres will be down just because of the soft red winter wheat acres down so much.
Yep. Yep, I would agree with you, Ellie, all the way. What did you think? I was talking with... someone from ADM yesterday, and we were talking about what basically he's hearing, just like what I'm hearing from clients, you know, and from other people as to profitability on the new crop.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he had an inquiry from a guy who had like 15,000 acres of corn and 10,000 acres of beans. And he said at the current prices, his loss would be $1.6 million this year if he locked these prices in right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so everything will come down to what our spring is like, don't you think? As to whether or not they plant more corn or they don't plant more corn. You know, they're all talking beans, beans. Everybody's going to plant beans mm-hmm. everywhere. But
we've had that discussion in our office several times, and historically that springtime weather is the key. If the planters for corn are going good, they probably will push on a little bit further than they previously anticipated, which really makes your March prospective plantings or prospective plantings number that much more in play, because it could be totally misrepresentative of reality if mm-hmm. your spring weather turns out to be ideal.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to be out at the Ag Forum, so it'll be interesting to see what they have to say, although, you know, that's really a November number.
So
mm-hmm. those numbers are going to be yeah. added with plenty of acres and plenty of yield.
Right.
If we have December corn at, and I'll just round it, at 450 at the mm-hmm. moment, and we have November beans at 1125, and I guess that's, what, 75 cents in favor of beans?
It depends on the region.
Well,
I've got guys all over the place that have differences. If you go down to Kentucky, they're probably going to have to go to beans with a lot more favoritism. If you get up into the more 50-50 guys, they're probably going to stay 50-50. I've also heard some comments out of the northern plains that guys that have been 70-30 are basically moving towards that 50-50 because it's not worth the risk, and they don't have the moisture. So it probably depends on the region, and the numbers will probably be a long time in coming.
I was guessing that maybe we had more to break in the soybeans than we do in the corn.
Mm. Well, I think that's
in price.
I think that's a realistic observation. I mean, you know, it isn't a matter of we need corn. We have a really over adequate supply at the moment, at least on the books. But you know, when it comes to the beans, I think that'll be the key, and that's what could take us from $11.20 down to $10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's all about perception, not about reality. It's perception. That's if the trade perceives mm-hmm. that this is what's going to happen, that price is going to go to a level that we'll discover either buying mm-hmm. or more selling. It's just as simple as that.
So perception becomes truth.
Well,
you know,
that's
it. Yeah,
well, that's really about the way it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, don't you think, Ellie, when you watch the markets long enough, you begin to realize that, you know, it is a price discovery tool.
Oh, yeah.
And so if the perception is one way and then the market finds something different, in other words, more buyers,
mm-hmm.
that can change the perception. But
doesn't it make you nervous that so many are just leaning on a bearish corn and, you know, friendly beans? I mean, that mentality just seems like everybody's taking the same medicine.
It does. And whenever that's the case, that's when I start mm-hmm. to look the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was bearish corn for a long, long time. And what I'm doing right now is just sitting back and saying to my guys, hey, you know, we got to watch for a bottom here. And lift our hedges and then buy some calls
mm-hmm.
and just sit back and let the market do. Because, you know, let's face it, I think, Bill, you said, you know, about possible weather problems, you know, anything.
No, and we've been in years of extremes. That's one of the mm-hmm. things. And we used to make our marketing plans based on a normal situation.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you got to kind of go down the middle of the road, but you got to be looking for signs that this is going to be an extremely hot or extremely cool or extremely wet or extremely dry. I'm not calling for a drought, but I am still thinking, look at Australia, look at California, look at the northern plains.
Yep.
This situation very well could get more intensified in different places. I got guys in Ohio that had fantastic yields coming on, ended up getting a 156 yield on corn because they got 9 inches of rain in 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you've got pockets that just challenge the overall production figure. And it makes it difficult to market against.
I would agree with you. And the other side of that, the flip side of that is, you know, because of what we've seen here in the past, in other words, everybody thought the crop this year was going to be trash.
Right.
And it turned out to be really great. It'll be a harder sell,
right,
you know, to get people to be willing to admit that that's what's going to happen.
Short-term memories, don't we?
Oh, yeah, no kidding. But that's what our job is all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not about short-term memory, but it's about trying to mm-hmm. make sure we do remember
mm-hmm.
and yet deal with what's currently going on. And
sometimes I feel like a professional hand holder.
Well, that's what we are.
Yep.
I actually had a, a, a guy who interviewed me once and asked me, he said, "What? How would you describe your job, Jackie?" And at that point in time, and it's probably not much different right now, I said, "You know, it's about maybe 10% education, 15% recommendations, and 75% handholding.
Mm-hmm.
It's psychological counseling,
yep,
is what it is." And you know, it's people. When someone comes to you and they're upset about something, let's say, you know, they're very, very concerned, you just have to keep asking questions and asking questions and asking questions.
Yep.
So it is psychological, you know. And let's face it, these markets are emotional.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and for us, they're emotional. For the farmer, they're extremely emotional.
I always thought it would be fun if you put a dollar-o-meter on the side of the bin. So
that's
every
what
day
I've always recommended.
It says what it was worth yesterday and what it's worth today and what it was worth a month ago.
And it calculates your interest costs and it calculates all of that. Yes, I know that.
You could just look out the end of the driveway and see what it was worth today.
Yeah. Well, bins have made a lot of people a lot of money over the last number of years. But, you know, we have to make the adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I'm going to have to jump off because I got a couple things off. I'm an hour deeper into the afternoon than you guys.
Oh, yeah, that's
yes,
right.
You are. You're way over there in the lovely, lovely east.
All right.
Nice hearing from you guys.
Thanks,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.